Welcome to Pacific Bear Chat. I'm Mike, and I've got a special guest here.
Hey, this is Scott Thompson from Mad Lab Distilling.
And this is the actual first, like, straight-up distillery that's been on the show, so you're the first.
I'm pretty happy about that, Mike. I'm glad I could get a chance.
All right. Well, I guess why don't we start with where are you located, just so people kind of know where you're from.
We're in South Vancouver, down sort of right at the bottom of Fraser near Kent. We're a tiny, tiny little space. We're really hard to find. You got to kind of know where we are to find us. The address is 618 East Kent South, Unit 119, sort of hidden away in a little industrial complex down there on down there south of Marine.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you don't really have a tasting room, but...
Yeah, we have a little bit of a space for bringing in some private tours and whatnot, but as far as frontage, we don't really have a great space, so we sort of kind of don't do too many of the actual traditional tasting room style stuff. But if you like to pop by and say hi, you know, shoot me a message. I'm always happy to show people around and show them what we're doing.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe one day that'll all get all worked out, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. One day we'll have a big packed lounge in there. It'll be fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I usually ask, like, you know, what beer or brewery got you into craft beer, but I mean, this is distillery, so what kind of got you into craft spirits or craft beer, whatever, into the craft scene?
It's funny, like, you know, Mike, I mean, you and I, obviously, we met when we were doing craft beer pairing, so, you know, I've been in the industry for a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
But basically, yeah, I started off, first bar I ever worked at was Raven Pub, and it was actually it was a great craft beer bar at the time. I mean, this is pushing up on 20 years ago.
Oh, geez.
They were sort of an early starter. I actually got introduced to places like Storm and Cranog right when I was 19. So I really got a kickstart into the craft industry. I kind of didn't know anything else, really, to be honest. You know, at that age, of course, you go to house parties, you get the regular crap. But
yeah.
But, you know, I was, you know, again, learning about craft beer kind of right at the inception point. And then, yeah, what happened was a lot of the people that I knew down there, it was a lot of the people working in the kitchen, a lot of people sort of behind the bar. They were doing home brewing. They were doing all grain brewing. And again, sort of the early stages of when that was really getting some popularity in the Lower Mainland. And it was awesome. And I loved doing it. And I loved getting sort of into that side of it. But, you know, I found it kind of didn't hold my interest as much. And if you know me well, you know, something that's really popular sort of quickly loses a bit of interest for me. I always like to go for the weird and bizarre.
Yeah.
And you know, like, you know, I mentioned Storm as being one of the first places that I ever learned about craft beer, and they're still one of my favorites. So that sort of, if you know their style, that's sort of my style a little bit. You want to put out the best product and it's, you know, it's 100% function over form on everything. So, so basically, from that point on, you know, everyone was doing craft beer, everyone was doing home brewing. And I kind of thought, you know what, this is cool, but I want to take it to the next level. I want to try something a little more challenging or just something that other people aren't doing. And that was sort of what initially piqued my interest into getting into the market.
Well, I mean, it's so easy to be a home brewer and, you know, join a club and get into brewing and then, you know, spiral it off. It's not as easy to get into distilling. Like, how the hell did that happen?
Yeah, it's a little harder. I mean, there's definitely a lot more safety issues. So you have to be kind of willing to, first of all, really delve into learning about the safety issues. You want to do a lot of research kind of before you, you know, even start dabbling into anything like that. And that was like, I was 19, I was 20. You know, I spent probably 3-4 months just researching, you know, how it's done, the safety, the health hazards, the safety, all these different things before I even went in and dipped my toe into it. And then just from there, it was a matter of, okay, well, that first one worked. Okay. You know, again, always erring on the side of caution when it comes to safety. You know, you don't want something exploding in your kitchen. That's certainly going to ruin your day, and you're going to lose your damage deposit. So, we started off, kind of building little homemade stills, you know, just little tiny guys that we'd run in our kitchen. And just developing the craft from there, and then that was sort of it. And I was just once I got the handle on it, then I kind of couldn't stop. It was just like, you know, so much fun. I always wanted to try to find a better way to do something, a different product, new flavor profile. So it was just I found it to be a really diverse sort of art form you could just dive into.
Nice. Well, when did you move towards opening Mad Lab then?
You know, so I actually, it was a ways back, probably about 7 or 8 years ago now, when the provincial government laxed up on some of the rules regarding distilling, making a craft distilling license where if we're using all locally grown agriculture, all BC input. we were able to get sort of exemption where we didn't have to go through the LDB channel, and we could avoid that massive, massive markup that they put in.
Yeah.
It was the only way to really give us a chance. So when that happened, I was working with a company, Kuhner Hospitality. That's where you and I met at the Hop and Vine and the Pump House there. I was in there and, you know, there was talk of, you know, opening a brewery and this and that. And I just saw everything kind of dragging out a bit. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to just put together the plan, see what happens, see if I can make something work. And one thing led to another, and I had my business plan, and all of a sudden it was like, well, you know what, let's just hand in the application and see what happens. And
yeah,
you know, it's just been baby steps ever since to where we are now.
Nice. What was the actual opening date then for the distillery? Do you know?
Remember? You know what? You got me on the spot there. It was in late 2015 was our first brew and our first distillation. I could have to get back to you on the exact date. I'll put it up on social media. You can pluck it from there.
No worries.
So we've been producing basically since then, but it's been definitely a lot of ups and downs in that time frame for sure.
Oh, you know, for sure.
A lot of long sleepless nights, a lot of long days, but we're still alive, which is good.
Yeah, what small business doesn't have ups and downs, right?
Right? Yeah, any small business owner that's sleeping well is probably lying about something.
Yeah, or delusional.
Right, exactly.
Well, I guess why don't we talk about the distillery itself? What is your size of your system?
So the system that we have a our still, first off, is a it's a pot still with a thumper. Our boiler right now is at 800 liter capacity, so we're usually doing 600-700 liter fills on it, just so we get a bit of headspace. And in our brew house, we actually picked up Sons of Vancouver's one. They switched to a different system. They went to a conical fermenter fermenting on the grain, but nice. So we bought their mash lauter ton from them, and that's a 2600 liter capacity. So basically right now we're basically brewing about 2000 liters of mash at a time, which is sort of enough to keep us busy for a week and a bit processing that through the still.
Nice. And then I guess what is your sort of fermentation / still capacity?
So the still capacity is about 800 liters. Yeah, like I said, and then with about a 600 fill average. And then, so right now what we do, and this is a little bit unique for us. So in the distilling world, we're kind of have a little bit more leeway with fermenters and stuff, because we're not bottling that as a final product. It has to be processed a bit more. So we actually do, and like a lot of distillers do, we basically do a primary fermentation in the Ibex totes, in the big plastic totes there. So what we do is, yeah, we start the fermentation in there, and then from there, once we've opened up some space in the stainless tanks, we've got a 10 heck and a 7 heck fermenters that are just scrounge parts that we managed to get together.
Nice.
We'll transfer over to them, and then basically we leave the yeast cake in the bottom of our fermenter, so we only drain it the day that we brew.
Nice.
We drain it, kind of give it a clean out, but we leave the yeast cake in the bottom, and so we basically take the fresh mash up and over the top. So it's just that continuous fermentation. We've got that yeast culture. It doesn't go anywhere. It just stays. And we just kind of keep rolling it over and over and over and over again, like a sourdough bread. Just,
nice. That's really cool, because you could never do that in beer, really. It would...
No,
you're too hard.
And that's the nice thing, is that, like, you know, because it's, as soon as it's done fermenting, we throw it right through the still. It's got a little bit more wiggle room as far as fermentation goes on that. We can make adjustments through the distillation process to flavor adjust if there was, you know, a little bit heavier body, a little bit lighter, those kinds of things. So, you know, we've got that, wiggle room, which is nice.
Definitely. Well, I'm kind of a geek for names. Where did you come up with Mad Lab Distillery? And then kind of talk about some of the names of some of your products too.
Yeah. So so Mad Lab, it was, you know, we were kind of racking our brains, but we always had the feel that we wanted. We wanted we were thinking sort of 20s prohibition era. People always often refer to me as a mad scientist, because those who have known me since the early days I'm quite often known for handing people random jars of liquid and saying, here, try this.
Nice.
So that's what people that knew me back in the day kind of knew me for. So they knew I was always busy concocting something. And so we kind of had that vibe coming into it, and just sitting around over cocktails with some friends. We're thinking mad scientists. We're thinking, again, like prohibition era, and we thought, oh, the laboratory, the mad laboratory, it's crazy in there. And we're like, okay, that'll work. And from there, we had our buddy, actually Adrian, who, you know, did our logo up for us.
Nice.
We just ran from there. So that's the, that's the general name. And then, yeah, as far as the products go, like I know we were talking earlier, you've got some of the Gin 6 there. So we actually, the plan originally, and we still has a plan, but we haven't released any others yet, is to put botanical statements on our gin. So that's our 6 botanical gin. So if you actually look, we'll go, so as we release different flavors and different flavor options, we'll have a botanical statement on each of those, much like we would get an age statement on whiskey.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what else? You said you're asking about naming of the products. I'm trying to think of what else. So we have the Okarake, which is the sort of a, it's the Turkish style of ouzo. Basically, it's high alcohol, low sugar. Okur is the last name of my business partner. Nice. And it's also the Turkish word for country. So it kind of all fit together. So we called it the Okarake. It's kind of, you know, it's a Canadian country variation on the product. And it kind of tied everything together that way. We had a little bit of fun with that one.
Nice.
Yeah. And then we've also got, of course, the Mad Dog, which is our new make. So that's sort of the before it becomes whiskey or white whiskey, as some people would call it. Mad Dog, of course, a play on the White Dog, which is sort of a typical name for that sort of that grain moonshine you would get down south if you got a chance to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you've also got a couple of vodka products too, right?
We do, yeah. So our main line of vodka is just Mad Lab vodka. It's triple distilled. Super smooth, super soft. It's a great vodka to just drink straight, or like I like to drink it Russian style, just keep it lightly chilled and have a nice big bowl of pickles in the middle of the table, just pour the shots around. We also carry we also produce our Viking vodka. That one, it's, you'll notice it because it comes in a plastic bottle and it won't break and it will float. It's fantastic. that's the one we needed something that was going to be cheap and cheerful. We did everything we can to keep the cost down while keeping the product still fantastic. So if you see the packaging and tell me it looks cheap, I know that was the point.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's the no-name brand of vodkas, but I tell you, it makes a killer Caesar, and it's great for cocktailing. It's got a really nice kind of soft, light sweetness to it, and yeah, just a beautiful product when you gotta make a little cocktail, which I know most people do with vodka. So
yeah, and then you were telling me the other day that it's also got a pretty good price point too, so that doesn't hurt either.
Yeah, we try to keep that one down. We retail, I think we retail that one for $28 for a $750, and that's tax and deposits in. So, you know, it's in that bottom tier price point. Some stores actually might sell for a little bit cheaper than that, but yeah, the idea is to get something local craft and accessible that people can buy without, you know, having to commit. Because I mean, I know our premium products, the prices, you know, they're you know, you get what you pay for, but they are a bit steep, and they're a bit for some people that just want to make a Caesar. You know, you don't want to be spending that kind of money on a premium product. You just want something that'll work, and that's kind of where we went with that one. Is that, you know, you can support local, you can have a craft product, but you don't need to spend through the moon if you're depending on what you're using it for, right? So
yeah, definitely. It's also, you know, awards are really nice, and I'm seeing here on your Gin 6 that you won a Canadian Artesian Spirit Competition gold in 2019.
Yeah, we got the 2019 gold on our gin and on our vodka.
Oh, nice.
And then we got the silver for the Mad Dog, and then our Viking vodka actually won a bronze. So it's sort of nice that we get the recognition, but it's right in the tiering that we would expect, you know, the top award. Medium, and then down to the, you know, we're still getting an award, but it's not, you know, it's definitely not the highest grade as the premium product is. So,
but whatever, right? It's still an award. It still means that it's one of the best in the country, right?
Yeah, it feels pretty good. It's when we first got those, I was pretty happy. I was over the moon, I can tell you. You know, it's nice. It's like I feel like I produce a good product, and I'm happy with what I do. But it's always nice to have somebody else tell you.
No, for sure. Yeah.
It definitely brings you up a little bit, and it keeps you motivated.
Definitely. What are the sizes of bottles that you sell?
Currently, we have everything in 50 mil. We have a 375 for all of our main products, so the vodka, the gin, and the Viking. And then some of our other products that are a little more bizarre, we have only in the 375, we've got our kombucha cordial, which is sort of it's like a kombucha based liqueur, 20% alcohol, but really light in sugar. The Mad Dog also just in the 375, and then the Rocky 50 mil and the 750.
Awesome. Well, why don't we talk a little bit about, what do you think, the gin first?
Yeah, we can talk gin. Gin's always a fun one. People... you know, gin to the spirit world is kind of what IPAs are to brewing. You know, there's such a massive range and scale. Like, you can have a really heavy London dry style that's like super, super heavy on junipers. It's like chewing a pine tree. It's intense. And you've got some of the lighter New World style gins. You know, you get your botanical mixes and then a little bit of a softer blend. So, you know, there's this just massive, massive range for the flavor profiles of gin. And that's one of the things is, you know, I didn't used to think I liked gin. I used to think I hated gin.
I used to hate gin too, because I hadn't had good gin.
No, and exactly. And it turned out I just don't like London dry gin. I like something a little bit softer. You know, you can still get the botanicals, but you don't get kind of overpowered if it's a little too much juniper. You know, it's like when you get an unbalanced IPA, and it's like, you know what? Okay. I like the hops, but calm the fuck down for a minute.
I love those too, but
yeah, exactly.
Haven't had a lot of them lately.
Sometimes I just like something, you know, it's like kicking in a little 50-60 IBU. I'm a little comfortable and happy, you know.
Yeah.
I don't need to assault my palate every day.
Yeah, once in a while. So talk about a little sort of the flavor profile on this Gin 6.
So the Gin 6, so again, Gin 6 for me, I like a lighter style gin. So it is, it's definitely a little bit easier on the botanicals. We wanted to do 6 botanicals because we wanted to make sure each flavor has a bit of a chance to work its way on your palate. So you're not completely wiping it out with just a complete mass of too many botanicals. But yeah, we started, of course, juniper. We've got a bit of coriander in there. Yeah. We use lime zest. So those are sort of typical botanicals there. And then what we use is we do cucumber skins. So yeah. it is a cucumber gin, but it's a cucumber is one of the botanicals, not infused after. Some people take their cucumber gins are infused after distillation, which is like a really heavy, heavy cucumber flavor. So this is just a little bit softer, a little bit lighter. And then we also we use a bit of bay leaf and dill. And what we found is the bay leaf to kind of give it that pepperiness, that spiciness, and the dill gives it a really bright finish, that really like spring garden. So whenever I'm drinking it, I always just like imagine I'm literally sitting in a garden drinking my gin out of a teacup. You know, little tea party in the garden, the white rabbit goes running by. It's interesting times.
Yeah, no doubt.
No, it does, and it also does really well with a little bit of citrus. Like I typically keep this one away from tonic because it'll just sort of wash it out a bit. So a little bit of soda, a little fresh lime. It's super bright, super crisp, very refreshing.
Yeah. I mean, sorry. The cucumber is quite strong in the flavor without overpowering it. Like, I'm getting what you're saying, but cucumber is definitely the bigger note in the flavor, but I like that.
And for sure.
I've been mixing it with tonic as well as not, and even though it's a fairly strong flavor, I think it's still in parts like that nice citrus and the nice cucumber, even to the gin and tonic, not as much as like throwing cucumber slices in.
Yeah, for sure. And like, even for me, like I love getting, if I'm doing a gin and tonic, I'll usually do gin and soda with a splash of tonic on top to let some of those flavors really come out a little bit more. But even if you're going with you're going to the dry martini with an olive in there, a bit of salinity added into that, that dill kind of, and the cucumber, it all kind of comes around. It's got that nice, you know, lightly savory kind of flavor to it. We're pretty happy with how the flavor profile came through on that one.
Maybe when the world, shifts a little bit here, maybe we can try some cocktails together.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. When we can be more than, well, we got to be able to have like what, 3 inches nose to nose. I think, and once we can do that, we'll be okay.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
When I can breathe through your beard safely.
Definitely. All right. Well, why don't we? What do you recommend for the next one to talk about and try here? There's the s'mores Rocky.
We can touch briefly. Well, you know, let's touch briefly on the vodka because it's go through it briefly.
That one I don't have in front of me, but yeah, let's talk about that too.
So again, the two vodkas. So the Viking is actually just sort of back it up a little bit. Our grain bill for all of our products is 100% single malt. So we're using BC grown malted barley for all of our products. We're only doing one base alcohol and diverting from there. So that some of that flavor kind of imparts its way through all of our product line. So in the Viking vodka, it's double distilled. You're going to get a little bit of barley notes on the back end there. You're going to get some light sweetness. And then moving up to the premium vodka, those notes become much more subtle, and you get a a much softer and sort of cleaner finish on the premium vodka. But it's the premium one. I recommend if you're going to get that one, if you're someone who just likes to drink your vodka straight up or on the rocks, it really doesn't need anything. It honestly drinks like a whiskey. It's because we're starting with that that malted barley backbone. Because we're only using a pot still instead of a column still. You know, we're able to retain a little bit of those good flavors, that the richness from the grain, but while still kind of getting a nice chemical purity and getting a nice smooth clean finish on it. But yeah, so that's the vodka.
Nice.
And then you were saying you wanted to talk about that. I know you've got the s'mores Old Fashioned in front of you. So that's one of our newest ones that we've released. And right now we currently only have it available in the 50 mil. We will be trying to do a 375 as well at some point, but it's times are a little hectic right now, making hand sanitizer as fast as we can. So I don't have as much time to put together as much as I need, but our s'mores Old Fashioned, it's obviously a twist on a classic Old Fashioned. Everything we do always is kind of with a twist. We don't like to do anything the easy way.
Yeah.
Or like I said before, you know, if too many people are doing it, I slowly lose interest.
How do you recommend serving this first?
I would just pour it just straight over the rocks. Just get yourself is that your cube there?
Yeah,
on ice, and then best garnish for that. It does really well with a bit of orange is always a good thing with an Old Fashioned. But for our particular one, I like a little toasted mini marshmallow in there. That's my favorite garnish on that. It really brings the whole experience home.
Damn it, I don't have one of those.
My heart here.
It's hard to find stuff at the grocery stores right now.
It is a little bit of a challenge, for sure. But yeah, so the s'mores Old Fashioned, again, variation on the classic. We use, we're technically not using a whiskey for it. We're just using a lightly oaked version of our Mad Dog, which is our new make spirit. So that was sort of one of the things we came in here. But we made, basically, it is our Mad Dog, some brown sugar. We made our own aromatic bitters, our own chocolate bitters, and some vanilla. It was a cocktail that we were making at events all the time. People were going absolutely crazy for them. But every time someone would ask me, "Oh, hey man, what's the recipe? How do I make this?" And I start telling them, see the eyes just glaze over, and I'm like, "Man, you're not gonna go out and get three kinds of bitters." So
no, it's
just,
no.
So it was just one of those things where, you know, for us, there was a lot of people out there that liked the product. They thought it was delicious, but I know that they weren't ready to kind of delve into the tending as much as they might need to get the right mix and the right quality there. So,
yeah, that's really, really, really smooth.
Yeah.
And what's the percentage on that again?
30%.
That's really dangerous.
I know. Well, right now, like I said, right now, just as a 50 mil, it's an easy grab and go, and you can just, throw it in your bag, and then when you hit the beach, you can throw it in your, you know, throw it over some rocks, and you're good to go, sitting by the campfire. Once those exist again, too.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, because it's got a nice sweet note. It definitely has kind of that marshmallow thing going on, a little bit of chocolate and some brown sugar or something.
Yeah,
it's super. It's too smooth. We're getting into one of those things like some of the imperial beers that are just, especially imperial stouts, that can just be so easy to drink. And it's like, oh shit, this one's like 18% alcohol. Well, this is 30, but you know,
I had that problem with Bomber. They did a barley wine at one point. I think I put back three good sized glasses of that before I realized that it was like 12%.
Yeah.
And then that was my day was irrevocably altered.
You're already losing your words thinking about it.
I know, it happens. It sneaks up on you.
It does.
But yeah, so that's the s'mores Old Fashioned, and that's the first in a cocktail series for us. We will be releasing more of them. We have our next one to come out, which should be, I'm hoping sometime in the next few weeks, if I can get time to put it together, is we're going to do our Blue Negroni. Nice. Which is a twist on the classic Negroni. It's a little bit lighter on the bitterness and a little bit lighter on the sweetness. So it's overall a little bit more of a approachable Negroni for those who maybe can't handle the 101 IBU beers that want something that you know they can still taste.
Oh, for sure, yeah. So that has to happen sometimes.
Yeah, so that'll be the next one coming out, and then. So we're going to try to come up with basically every couple months, come up with a new pre-mixed batch cocktail that's just ready to go. People can just throw it in their glass and not worry about anything else.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. And then, we've also, the other thing we've done is we've also started our doing cocktail bitters as well. This is mainly just done through our online sales. There's a handful of stores that have picked some up. Firefly and Vintage Spirits over on the island have grabbed some to start, but we'll start seeing a little bit of that there. But as true Mad Lab fashion, you're going to see some bizarre flavors come out of there.
Nice. And then let's talk about the was it Raki or whatever again?
Raka. You know what? I'll say it, and then in my head I'm like, no, you pronounced it wrong. Nikolaj.
I can't open this one.
Yeah. Raki is a traditional Turkish spirit, which it's in the anise family, similar to ouzo or pastis. Very strong licorice or anise seed flavor. So most people know ouzo is a little bit more common. It's similar flavor profile, but you're going to get it's going to be higher alcohol and much lower in sugar. So you can actually have a couple of them without putting yourself into a massive hangover or gut rot time.
Yeah.
So, you know, this one, when we sell a 750 ml bottle, has just 4 grams of sugar in it. So just enough to help get those flavors pop a little bit. Again, our base spirit, we use our premium vodka that we infuse and then redistill with an absolute massive amount of anise seed.
Yeah, it smells like a massive amount.
Yeah, so we took, so my current business partner is, he's Turkish, and one of the conditions he had about coming to business with me is, you know, you have to make rakı. It's the main thing that he asked for, and he said, well, can you do it? And I said, I can. I said, it'll take us a little while to get the recipe just right, but I think we did. I think that was we finally hit it at about attempt roughly around 30, after about 6 months worth of trying to get it just right and getting panels of old Turkish guys in there to. There was definitely a few in there that loved to tell me I was doing a terrible job, but they were nice about it. But you know, it's always hard to win someone over on a traditional style of spirit.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Especially if they've been drinking it their whole life or whatever, right?
Exactly. But no, by the time we hit this last one, it was unanimous with the people that I was tasting with. They all loved it. They all thought it was fantastic. And some even said it was quite a bit smoother than the traditional one that they had. So it was a little bit easier to drink, which is always nice.
Damn.
Or something like that. But yeah, so anise seed and infused with some sultana raisins to give it that rich back end smell. And then sort of that like sweetness on the palate. Traditionally drank with ice water. So it'll cloud up when you do that. And it's one of those ones that it will, if you're ever stuck for a pairing and you can't figure out something to do, you know, we used to always make a joke about, well, if you're pairing with beer and you can't come up with a food, some sort of salted pork, something fatty, you know, like pair it with bacon, pair it with prosciutto, pair it with something, the serrano, pair it with something like that, and you can't go wrong. Ouzo's like that on the, or ouzo and sambuca and rakı are like that on the spirit side. The anise flavor it causes your taste buds to just fire like crazy.
Yeah,
it really enhances your dining experience. And I have not found a food yet that doesn't pair with it massively beautifully.
Yeah, no, so, it's got a really nice flavor. It's amazingly sweet for having almost no sugar in it. That's really cool.
Yeah, well, and the thing too is that the sugar that we did add wasn't actually to sweeten it, because even with no sugar in it at all, it will taste quite sweet. That anise, that flavor coming across is very sweet. You know, we found that even just a little bit of sugar, it actually really causes those taste receptors to fire for that licorice, that aniseed flavor. It just brings it right out, and it made even just adding a tiny bit just made a massive difference in the flavor. The flavor profile gave it a big richness to it, which was really important.
That's awesome. You wouldn't expect that. I wouldn't say it's quite as smooth as the s'more, but it's really smooth still.
The s'more, well, it's also almost twice the strength. So,
that's true. Yeah.
it's a great one, and a great digestive as well. Like, I always love it with I personally like it with dessert, even though that's not the traditional pairing.
Yeah.
But it's a fantastic one to just sit and have a little bit, especially like after dinner. It's magnificent, right?
That's amazing. Yeah. Like, I put in an ice cube here, and like, it's clear as day. Yeah. And now that the ice cube is melting just a tiny bit, yeah, it's clouded right up. It's almost as hazy as like a hazy IPA. It's just white instead of orange.
The Turks would call it the lion's milk. the traditional term for that. So it's the lion's milk. It's going to go white. It's it looks like you poured a couple shots of skim milk in there, and it slides right up on you.
It definitely tastes better than a bit of skim milk, though.
Well, yeah, probably.
I don't like drinking milk that much.
Well, you need to save room for beer, man.
That's, no, exactly.
This is who you are.
It's true.
It's, yeah.
Why don't we talk a little bit about some of the stuff you're doing on the side now with COVID-19 brutalizing the world right now?
Yeah. So we've as I'm sure everybody at this point knows, distillers and spirit producers, everyone's kind of getting in the game. We're all trying to help out as much as we possibly can. And, you know, us being a small shop and it's just me there, it's hard to produce a lot. And especially with our setup. So we've got a pot still. So it's not chucking out massive amounts of super high alcohol. It takes us a little while to get there as far as getting alcohol that's high enough to use for it. So, but we are pumping out what we can. And what we've decided to do, what our part can be to help in this, is we've switched over to a sanitizing wipe. So we've made like little alcohol packs of alcohol wipes for personal use. We had a lot of requests for people. We've donated a ton of the liquid, but we just found that there was some marginalized in some communities that were maybe not getting served as well. Some of the downtown east side. There's some other charity groups that have come to us and said, you know, there's these certain communities that they're really hesitant to get rubbing alcohol or hand sanitizer in because of the addiction problems and the potential for abuse. So we thought, you know what, this way it can stretch what small supply we have of the high alcohol out, but it can also be used to help get access to people that might otherwise not be able to get a hold of it. And it's also just a really easy thing to just carry on you all the time. Yeah. It's a small pack. It just can go in your pocket. You can go out and do your shopping. It's enough to kind of, you know, wipe your hands down when you can't get to a proper hand washing space. You can wipe down some surfaces if you need. And we've just found that, it's small. And, you know, I was telling people, I often feel like, you know, feel like I'm not doing enough. Like I see what some people are doing, but you know, with the resources we have, we're doing everything we can. So, but we're happy and we're getting an amazing response. So far we haven't charged anything for these. We've done, for some of the larger companies that wanted to get more for their staff, we've asked for small donations just to help us keep producing them and to keep the materials that we need to make more. But yeah, if anybody who wants them can just come down to the distillery while we're open. We're giving out two packs per person, no charge, no purchase and anything like that. Just come on by, they're all yours. So, we're trying to keep people as safe as we can, right? Everyone's got to do their little bit.
No, for sure. Well, since craft distilling is not as big as craft beer right now in the province, where do you see the industry going?
You know what? I mean, we are kind of riding the craft beer coattails a little bit. I mean, it's definitely in BC. And like you and I discussed earlier, I've been in the craft beer scene in some way or another for about 20 years as well. So I'm kind of well versed in what's happening in that industry, but. We're coming along. We're definitely we're a little bit behind where craft brewers are for sure. We're all fighting hard to kind of follow the same models in terms of, you know, we've got great support amongst one another. You know, none of us are competing with each other. We're all working together. We want to have the same as like the early days of Camera, right? We want to push the industry as a whole up. We want to have people, instead of going to buy those macro products, going to buy those factory produced products, you know, they can get something that's locally made, that's of better quality, that's going to help support the local economy too. Because I mean, when it comes to, you know, we talk about certain aspects of kind of macro brewing, right? You know, you look at things that are people that are doing like high gravity brews and then diluting it, or they're using a lot of high fructose corn syrup and like things like that. There's techniques like that in brewing, but in distilling, there's additional layer of the type of still that you use. So a lot of these macro producers are just using a continuous still and they're just cranking product through it as fast as they can. And the big problem, and this is something I try to teach people a lot about the differences between a craft spirit and a macro spirit, is a lot of the macro spirits, when they're doing the continuous distillation, it's, you know, they're getting a nice high, you know, high amount of ethanol. It's fairly pure, but just by the nature of that technique, you're not able to fully chemically separate out all the things that are going to give you that nasty hangover.
Yeah,
you know, we're batch distillation. Like I think pretty much everybody in the craft industry is doing. Batch distillation allows you to get a really good clean separation of your heads off, so you're getting any sort of methanols, any acetones, any of those sorts of things that are a natural byproduct of fermentation. You know, we're able to really hard cut those out, and especially like we're doing with our pot still, we're doing full recharges of our still every time, so we're getting a really hard separation of those nasty chemicals, which, you know, the big guys, the big companies, they get it to a safe level. Right, they get it to a level that's safe for consumption, but that's why sometimes you get a real cheap bottle of whiskey, and you got that real nasty hangover the next day, right?
Oh yeah, so, yeah.
Too many additional chemicals in there that you don't necessarily want.
It's like a shitty macro beer, right?
It's like a shitty macro beer, exactly. different avenue, different direction we're taking it, but yeah. So the industry, like we've seen massive growth in the last little bit, and massive growth in popularity too, which is nice. I mean, when we started this, every tasting I did. Someone, there's distilleries in BC. There's locally made spirits. What are you talking about? And whereas now it's super common. Oh, you guys are local. Where are you? And it's like not even a matter of there's this is the thing. It's like, okay, cool, yeah. Well, we know distilleries. Okay, which one are you? And so that's helping a lot. And a lot of the stores. So like we'll go through the pretty much 90% of our sales are through the private channel. We're not doing any LDD listings. There's a lot of reasons for that, but the local private stores are being massive, great supporters of us too. Like they've even since the early days, there was some fantastic stores out there that took a risk on us. You know, they came in and they supported us right from day one. And I've got a handful of them, and I know you know a lot of mutual friends that we have.
Yep.
That have jumped in and kind of really backed us right from the beginning and helped push the craft spirits a bit more into the forefront. So it's been a big transformation. Like we've seen in the last 4 years what craft beer probably has seen in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. Like it's that we've seen that target, we've seen that path, and we're kind of modeling what we do after what you guys did. Yeah. As well. So we're kind of going in that direction and you know learning, you know, standing on the backs of giants, as it were.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, you guys really blaze the trail for educating people on, well, why would I spend a few extra dollars for this handcrafted local product when I could save a few dollars and get this swill that was factory produced, you know, God knows how long ago, maybe refrigerated, maybe not, maybe spoiled, maybe not.
Yeah, well, it tastes spoiled when it's fresh anyways.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Now, what does it taste like? It's good. I mean, that's the real question, right? So yeah, I mean, the market, especially Lower Mainland, especially West Coast, from what I've experienced, obviously that's the only place we were in.
Yeah.
It's been massive amount of support from locals. People, they'll give us a chance just because we're local. They'll say, oh, you know, we want to support local. We'll try it out. And you know what? Some are going to like it, some aren't, but yeah. I really appreciate that people are willing to try and people have that idea in their head already that this is the direction we want to go. This is supporting everybody locally. It's keeping our money in our economy.
Yeah.
We do as much as we can to kind of stay in line with those goals.
Well, I mean, it doesn't hurt either with the silly rules for distillery or for craft distilleries in BC, having to keep all of your fermentable sugars grown in Canada. Or is it BC or Canada? BC.
BC.
There you go. So you're on already supporting local because everything that's fermented in that product is coming from this province.
Yeah. And I think, you know what? And I think that was a great initiative when they brought that in. I remember the day it was announced. I pretty much started putting together my plans when they announced that. I thought, you know, okay, maybe, you know, this is something that's doable now. And so I sort of literally started sort of taking notes and doing a little bit of research right as soon as they announced that. And because, you know, without that BC craft license, you know, we wouldn't be us and almost every single other craft distillery in BC wouldn't be able to open. We wouldn't be able to do what we're doing. So, you know, it made a huge difference. And it's a great industry to have helping out BC and keeping everything in the local.
I'm just a little bummed because I, my favorite spirit is rum, and it's one of the ones that's almost impossible to make with these rules.
It's funny because, you know, there's some people that have gone, you know, and stretched the definition of rum a little bit.
To get in there,
which is fine. I mean, I've had some of these great products that are made from honey, that are made from other products.
Oh, I'd like to try that actually.
You got to try. Yeah, it's there's some fantastic ones out there. Some use the rum name, some don't. You know, there's a way to do it where, you know, kind of if we can get like sugar beets grown in BC, we could do like a beet rum.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's not enough of those grown right now, I don't think.
Exactly. Not in BC anyways. Like, we could get, like, if we could get it from Alberta, we'd be able to open this wide open. We'd be able to have rum like crazy. But that's sort of,
yeah.
You know, it's it's still a pretty good side of the market. You know, we'll be having there'll be lots of whiskeys coming out soon. I mean, there's already a handful that have dropped, and
yeah,
you're gonna see more and more over the next 3-4 years. Ours is coming out in 2021, so we'll have a single malt whiskey ready to go, and that's where we're gonna, once the whiskey market kind of takes hold, that's when we're gonna really see that boom of that local spirit producers, because it's getting to that really nice, beautiful whiskey.
Yeah,
that it just really takes the time. But once we have that started, and once we have a system going, then you know, that's certainly going to see a big bump in the market as a whole.
I'd really like to see some Chilliwack corn mash, like bourbon, but not bourbon.
Yeah, no, and you know what? That's something that for sure someone's going to do. I know, I think Okanagan Spirits, I think, do a they don't call it, but it's the BRBN, the bourbon.
That one's it's not sweet enough for me for a bourbon. I've had it, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just not what I'm looking for in a bourbon.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, definitely, you know, it's funny. I was actually literally thinking about that this morning, thinking, you know, if I could get my hands on some virgin oak barrels, ooh, maybe I could pop off a few mashes of a few corn mashes. But
I mean, we can't really call it bourbon anyways, because it's from Canada. So just use whatever barrel you can find.
Yeah. No, I mean, well, that, but I mean, even that being said, like, you know, I don't know if. I know there's some in the beer market that are this particular about naming and making sure that the naming is appropriate, but there's the naming classifications and sort of specifics on whiskey are so specific and so detailed.
Yeah.
That yes, technically we could do one thing or another thing, but you know, we kind of want to as much as we can keep true to the styles. So
definitely.
Like we're making a single malt whiskey, but we're making it into a Scotch style. But it's not going to be called Scotch, obviously, because it's made in Canada. But we are still following every other technique for making that. So we're using seasoned barrels. We're using 100% single malt. You know, we're going to do the 3-year age. So we try to keep us true to the style, even though we're not necessarily naming it exactly
that style. Call it Scanada.
I'm trying to think of some new feature joke in here, but that's not going to come through, I don't think.
No.
But yeah, no, it's and I mean, there's, you know, for us, there's a lot of the stuff we try to do is a little bit more traditional, but at the same time, we like to get creative. We like to do new and weird things. So, you know, you'll see with our, like with our S'mores Old Fashioned, or with the, you know, we didn't talk about it too much today, but with our kombucha liqueurs, you know, there's some things that us and other spirit producers are creating that are not really, they're not made. They're not things that have been done before. So we're seeing these new styles come out, which are really awesome. Like, I love working with creating something completely unique, completely new. But the challenge then comes in is that if it doesn't fit into a category, it becomes a little bit harder to sell.
Yeah.
Right. It becomes like when I'm hand selling, like our kombucha liqueurs, I'm like, you know, people are trying it and I'm walking through some cocktailing and some basic mixing and stuff like that. They're loving the product. It's fantastic. We always sell a ton at markets. But when somebody looks at a shelf, they go, well, what the fuck is a kombucha cordial? Like, what is that even? You know, so it's sort of, you know, for us and for a lot of the distillers, there's a lot of creativity coming, but it's the challenge with that is then, of course, educating on, well, what is this new weird thing? And that's a big challenge that we have. So
definitely.
Naming's always an interesting one.
Where do you see your distillery going from here in the future? Are you going to try to expand it all? Or are you going to keep going just at this same size?
You know what? We'll try to get as much use out of the space as we can. I think the next big step for us would be some offsite storage for barrels as we start to run out of space. You know, we can crank out quite a bit of liquid from that spot as is. It just becomes a storage issue.
Yeah.
That's really what becomes the biggest driving factor for us, because the craft distilling license is also capped. It has a production cap. And I think, you know, we could get to, if we were going full bore, absolutely crazy, 7 days a week, 2 shifts a day, you know, we could get to that cap in that space. It's just a matter of, Wow. Yeah, it's. I mean, it would be tough. It would be a hard go, but and we would have to upgrade a little bit of equipment. But it's doable. But yeah, like it becomes, and again, even things of like storage of bottles and boxes and labeling and packaging and all that sort of stuff that adds up and adds up and adds up. So for us, like the next step in growth would be offsite storage. And then, you know, if we're seeing really good sales, if we're kind of cash flow positive and we're able to build something up, we would love to move somewhere where we can have that a bit more of that frontage, where we can have people coming down, we can have the lounge set up, we can have that sort of thing. 'Cause that's sort of the, you know, ultimate goal. But at the same time, you know, we don't want to grow too fast. You know, you see what happens. You know, I'm sure you've seen this a lot of times with pubs and restaurants and breweries and stuff. They're kind of trying to bite off more than they can chew all at once. And if you're not ready to run that new space at capacity, then, you know, you're in trouble. So, you know, we kind of want to resist expanding too fast. We want to make sure that we have a nice stable growth, and we want to have it be organic, you know, not majorly dependent on big swings here and there. But if we can do consistent sales, consistent growth, you know, we can get a lot of work and get a lot of use out of the space we're in now. And then by the time we're ready to move up, I want to make sure we're really ready to move, and we're not biting off more than we can chew.
Definitely. How far and wide is the product available in the province?
Currently in the province, I think in stores, we are sort of going north. We're all the way up to Whistler Blackcomb. We have some stuff out in Kamloops as far as east goes. We're working on getting some stuff into Kelowna. We're in most of the private liquor stores in Vancouver. Nice. Not all yet, but we're getting there. Lots in Burnaby, a couple in Richmond. So we're spread out pretty well. But we're still working on trying to get more and more growth, right? Every new store that takes us on really helps us out, because we want people to be able to see the product and know, hey, we can get a great local vodka, great local gin. And it's just, it's available. It's something that's around. So, but yeah. And then also on top of that, we've just launched our online sales as well. We actually did it just before all this, crazy isolation quarantine stuff happened. So we're actually lucky that we did that, but we're shipping, across Canada right now, with free shipping over $150. So
that's awesome.
If people want to get our stuff, they can order it. And then we also have, free local delivery for anything over $50. That's just in the Lower Mainland here. We can, you know, you can get it anywhere you need. Worst case scenario, you can order online and it'll come to you through Canada Post, or we'll drive it out to yourselves if you're close enough.
That's awesome. I guess, where's the best place for people to find Mad Lab Distilling online?
If you go to our website, madlabdistilling.com, it'll link you through to our online sales. And if you click on the products, it'll actually, as you go through our online store, if you click on the product, it'll give you a list or a link to a list of all the stores that carry it, so you can know where locally you are. And then if you follow us on our social media too, we quite often announce when there's new stores. We're at Mad Lab Spirits on all social platforms, keeping it consistent, which is always handy. And I think that's about it for online.
Perfect. Well, thanks for joining us. That was awesome.
Yeah, I'm glad we could do it. It was something to do while we're all quarantined, stuck in our homes here, right?
Yeah, no doubt. And when when this is all over, I'd like to try to get a bunch of the crew out to the distillery maybe and do some cocktails and stuff and do another episode.
Absolutely, man. I'd love to do some pairing and some cocktails and sort of remind us of the good old days.
Perfect. Well, thanks for joining us.
Awesome. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to Pacific Beer Chat. We can be found on all podcast apps as well as at pacificbeerchat.com. If you find a podcast app we are missing on, let us know and we'll endeavor to fix that. Leave us a review on iTunes as it helps expose more people to the show. You can email us at feedback@pacificbeerchat.com. We can be found on all major social media apps at Pacific Beer Chat. Logo design was by Tim, the craft beer tourist. Audio editing done by Cam, known as Cam on Tap on Twitter. To play us out, here is a clip of the song Lothian by the band Conundrum, performed by Kevin Ems. Find them at conundrum-music.bandcamp.com. The song that plays us out is part of our intro.